I'm doing all right, man. I've had a pretty intense week. Just kind of let you know what's happening right now with me. I got a call from, do you know James Robinson?
No, I
don't. Musician. He's a musician here in town, and he called me and just was like, you know, you should come talk to me, and you should talk to the rest of your friends so that you can learn about what's going on. And the second I started doing that, and it's not just like, oh, hey, I watch this documentary now. You know what I mean? Like I'm kind of in shock because I don't think I understood systemic racism. And just, my friend Bevis Griffin, I don't know if you know him either. He's a great musician and music guy. He's been around for a long time. And he suggested yesterday that I watch Out of Darkness, the documentary.
I don't think I've seen that one yet.
It's like a good 3 hours and 20 minutes of like the experience, the African American experience, and it's pretty tough. So I realized in talking to James that me and more people like me, regardless of your own personal feelings of racism, are part of a system that is racist, and you don't see it as a white person.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured if it's not just me, or James also figured if it's not just it's not just me, we could have these conversations and maybe wake some people up to what's going on.
Yeah, totally.
I read the post you wrote about Ahmaud Arbery, how are you doing? Let's start there.
Yeah.
I'm here to listen. Sorry.
No worries, man. No worries. So the week started out, I don't know. It's really, really intense, but it's also like, it's not like new news, you know, for like our community. And so it was interesting watching kind of anger boil over and like more people start to get involved. I'm really, for the most part, I try to be really careful about like how I'm taking care of myself and how I'm letting the information that I'm synthesizing like affect me. And so I jumped onto, as soon as I had realized that I was going to start making videos and kind of addressing a larger audience in general, it really helped me like cathartically sort of process what I was feeling and feeling like I could do something, right? Because I mean, when Ferguson popped off and everything like 4 years ago, I got really active with like Black Lives Matter Austin, and you interviewed my old band, which was like, we were very much like about like what was going on. We're very politically active. I didn't see myself jumping into that role again, because like I've been like on the street, I've been like protesting before, you know, and knowing that we needed to like kind of diversify tactics, I think it just feels sometimes like screaming into the ether. So by, you know, getting my thoughts together and doing the videos kind of forces me to process what I'm thinking and figure out how to express it rather than just like sitting with it. And so I felt as though I was in a pretty good place for the beginning of the week. You know, like people would reach out, because a lot of people are having these like eye-opening experiences, and kind of reaching out and being like, yo, like, I'm really sorry that I didn't know this was going on. Like, you know, just checking in with you. And for the most part, I was like, yeah, you know, like, I'm good. I'm choosing to like look at what we're fighting for and like what the possibilities are of like equality. Like, what does like dismantling systemic racism look like? Rather than trying to, you know, be filled with like rage or despair because of the current situation. But then, man, then yesterday when I woke up and I read about the testimony at the Ahmaud Arbery, I'm not sure if it's at the trial yet or if it's like it's pre, you know, but when that stuff came out about what his actual experience was, I mean, it's one thing when we talk about systemic racism, and it's one thing when we're talking about, you know, violence in police. But then when we start talking about the South and non-police officers using the kind of the language that they were using and like that experience of like hunting down a black man. That was just, there's something about that word and when it's used that like it cuts through you. And it's because it's not just you, it's like you and then like generational, like all of this stuff behind you. And I just could not, I had to take a moment yesterday because I couldn't process what I was feeling. And that's a scary place to be. It was just this rage and despair. And like, man, I wanted to go break things. I absolutely did. In that moment, I wanted to see it all burn, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that, I think a lot of Black people go through that experience, you know, but it's, we have to kind of, it's up to us to like figure out how to work through that and turn that into something constructive for the rest of our community. And it's not up to, you know, other people to kind of to look in and you know, critique tactics or things like that. It's just like, it's an interesting, strange time because we also didn't have the level of, I mean, in 2016 when Ferguson was popping off, we definitely had disinformation, but I feel like every month we have their current administration, like the amount of distrust of leadership and the amount of distrust of media and where people are getting their news sources has just ramped up and up and up. And so for this to happen, for people to start speaking out in the midst of the pandemic as well, and with all this misinformation and like it's like an information warfare sort of situation, it's an incredibly volatile but potentially good time, you know, like a lot of good could come from this, because I feel like these systems that are set up to benefit some more than others are really fragile right now.
Yeah.
I feel like everything is, you know, but yeah. Yeah, that's how I'm doing.
I feel like there's something about this particular time period and the George Floyd straw that broke the camel's back that I don't remember seeing protests go on this long, or the promise of even longer ones. I saw that you posted that there's another the Black Austin rally in March for Black Lives on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
That it seems like spreading the word and explaining to people what's really happening, because as a white person, you don't see it. You know, you just don't. And I don't know how else to describe it, but when I saw your video about the race-based trauma stress model, and then I watched this documentary last night, there's a lot about that. There's a lot about what you have to carry and how you have to act to get through society, to get through the day. And mm-hmm. that is far, far fucking different than my experience. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about the race-based traumatic stress model to sort of explain to someone that's listening that might not understand?
Yeah, definitely. I did a little bit of research for that video, and I forget the, because I don't have my notes, forget the name of the professor who came up with it.
I meant to write it down.
It's Gordon. But basically, the race-based traumatic stress model says, and it's a way of looking at trauma, right? There's this idea of using a trauma-informed lens when you're dealing with, so I work in child welfare, and so we talk about the trauma-informed lens a lot because we're talking about children who are in that child welfare system and how their experiences before they became a part of the child welfare system and their experiences while in the child welfare system will affect their outcomes, like the possibility for success in their future, right? And kind of looking at people's current actions, having to take into account the trauma that has led them to that point and why they're making those actions. So race-based trauma is essentially, it's the idea, well, at least the race-based traumatic stress model is the idea that there are experiences that people of color have in this country that traumatize us on a regular basis, and they are vast and they are varied. So there's I gotta remember. So there's interpersonal trauma. There's right. like this person to person, right? That can be as simple as like an argument on Facebook, or it could be as intense as someone using a racist slur against you. But then there's also institutional and there's cultural. So like institutional is like, I don't have to be arrested today to know that there is a disproportionate amount of people of color who are incarcerated right now.
Right.
And that knowledge is traumatic.
Yeah.
You know, that's a weight that like people carry with them. And then there's cultural. So that's like feeling less than because your culture is deemed as sort of less than, sort of like the Black way of doing things is seen as like a lesser way of doing things. Or, you know, like if you would just dress a certain way and speak a certain way, then you'd be safe. You'd be okay. You know, there's that sort of the trauma of like, of that sort of like erasure.
Yeah. Yeah. In how much has like having a child, has that changed your view of the desperate need for change? Added to it?
Yeah. Yeah. Because I think, before you have a child, it's a lot easier to think, let it burn. You know?
You can't let her world burn.
You can't let her burn. It the weight of knowing that I'm responsible for what kind of world I leave her. And the reason I'm tearing up a little bit is just because it's always heavy thinking about what kind of world you're leaving your child. But especially, like, she's 2 years old right now, and I'm just so thankful that like she is not old enough to process what's going on right now.
Right.
You know, and if I could hope for one thing, if I could have like one goal, it would just be that we've figured out some sort of way of doing this better before she's able to understand what's happening, before she can see images of people being tear gassed and her president like praising it, you know, and like knowing like why people are protesting and why they're being tear gassed, you know, like I had no intention of raising a daughter in a war zone. And you know, a lot of people who raise children in war zones didn't have the intention of doing that either, you know? So
no.
So, you know, we have to rise to the occasion and
yeah.
Yeah, you know, we gotta do what we gotta do.
There was a part of that Out of Darkness documentary where a series of different psychologists, sociologists, and authors talked about the talk that each Black parent has with their child to explain to them, like, okay, you're going to go out the door, but here's some shit you got to know.
Yeah.
Do you remember having that talk with your parents having that talk with you or somebody?
So my mom is, she's a Jamaican immigrant, and she married my father I got married in Jamaica and then came to the United States. My dad was in the Peace Corps and was teaching in Kingston and met her there. So for whatever reason, my mother kind of adopted through her like Christian faith, this sort of like all God's children are clear sort of mentality. And so in our home, for the most part, like race was never, we never talked about it. If it was brought up, she would always come back to this refrain that all God's children are clear, right? And I can appreciate what she was trying to say. But then when we had, there was, I went to a small like private Christian school, and a black girl was like, I was the only black kid there. And then there was a black girl who came maybe in like eighth grade or something. That was the first time there was like another black person around like my age. And everyone thought that, you know, she was going to be my girlfriend. Everyone was like, oh, like Jocelyn and Jonathan. And I'm like, why does everyone think that, you know? And my best friend's like, well, dude, cause you're black. And I was in eighth grade. It was the first time that I recognized that was a thing. You know, I was like, what do you like? I'm like, my mom's Jamaican, like I'm darker skin. Like I had been raised, because by not addressing it, I had been raised to think of black people as other, just because it wasn't addressed, just by going through, just by not having any other black people around me, and then not having enough of a mirror to recognize that I was the black person there. And then when I gave a white girl a Valentine's Day card on Valentine's, I heard some her dad had called the house and was furious that a black boy had sent a Valentine's Day card to his daughter, and was swearing out one of my parents on the phone, swearing out my mother, assuming that my dad was black. And then my dad got on the phone and started cursing him out. And I remember getting on the phone in like another room, you know, like landlines, right, you could listen in.
Yeah.
And it was a very mixed, it was a strange mixture of feelings, because I was like so proud of my father for the way, like I never heard him like defend somebody in our family like that. I was proud of him for this like righteous anger, but I heard like slurs being used when referring to us. And it was a strange thing. I was taught to always try to be the earliest, to always try to work the hardest. And I think I thought that it was just because that was our, you know, our work ethic, our ethos. But getting older, I think part of that was being like, you're going to be expected to be like, not perform as well as the other people at your job. So like, you need to try and make sure that you perform the best. And, that's definitely something that in my early 20s, I was always trying to like rise up at wherever I was at, because I didn't want to be, you know, I just thought it was important to, if I'm working at a store, I want to be the black manager of that store. I don't want to be just a black employee.
Right.
Like I always needed to, I can't just like be, I have to succeed.
Right.
Because I'm walking through the world as a black man, and like the only way to exist for me, at least at the time, was like excellence. Like it has to be excellence. You have to be an excellent black man at all times. You can't just like be.
Yeah. You can't, you, yeah. There's more expected of you because there's less expected of you.
Right? Yeah.
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 I talked to this guy, Sean Amos, just about his music, but we ended up getting on this subject. His dad is Famous Amos.
Mm-hmm.
and so he grew up like in this Hollywood situation where he was the only black guy in his crowd, but it was glaringly obvious that he was to him a lot while he was growing up. I'll send you this essay he wrote last Saturday. That was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
But, as far as like, you were talking about you've been wanting to find solutions and ways to there. How, like what steps can we all take to dismantle this system and rebuild it?
So The first, so yeah, one was, you know, visibility. I've been doing a lot of, some of my freelance work is for this like public speaker kind of person who's always like, he's in sales and stuff, right? And a lot of his, I edit videos for him, and he's always talking about these different like sales processes. And I'm trying to like see how that applies to what we're trying to do now. So like there's, so like people have to know about you and then like, and then like your mission. And then they want to like help. They want to like get involved. Like there's like steps, right? So I think right now we're in this big, like, we're in the middle of this like awareness phase before like people really make the purchase. I think everybody's sort of like, they're becoming aware of what's going on. And so I think, you know, I had made that video about like talking to the places that you work, talking to the organizations that you belong to, and asking people to make a stand, right? Which is, that's helpful for sure. Like we absolutely need to like show people that this is not like a fringe idea. Like the idea of equality is something that like we can all get behind. I think the next steps are sort of, we have to be careful not to, if we're trying to dismantle white supremacy, we have to be careful not to be white supremacist in our tactics, right? So it's, that's why like it's called, we're calling it like a movement for Black lives, right? But it's like a Black led movement. And I think one step would be people wanting to putting their money, putting their bodies out for the cause, but in a way that we're like conscious of making sure that Black people still have agency in how these decisions are being made and like how the money's being spent. There are like organizations that have been working on this for a long time. I mean, like Austin Justice Coalition locally has not only been working on the policy side of it, but they also have like community outreach programs and programs that are providing education for people. And I think supporting the Black-led organizations that have been doing this work is like one of the best ways. Not everybody can support monetarily, but I think just using our voices and like really being conscious to not take up more space than necessary. I think what was really, you know, when we first started talking and you were like, you had mentioned how like you need to do more listening, right? You wanted to make sure that I was, that you were centering me telling my story. And I appreciate that. And I think that that can be a good example for folks that want to help. I don't think that we, one, it's not going to be a quick fix,
no.
Right? And I don't think that there's only one thing that needs to happen. There's probably going to be a long process of fails before we get it right. But there's some legislation that's being worked on locally. And that's like, it's really early in the process. And so I'm not sure like how much I'm actually like supposed to like talk about it.
Sure.
But it's based around the, I think it was Mike Ramos who was killed in April,
mm-hmm.
Mike. Horrible. Thank you. So his mother is hoping to get legislation passed in the next legislative session. I mean, you know, there's defunding the police, which is not about, you know, it's not about not funding the police. It's about funding, looking at stopping crime before it happens. So uh-huh. Funding more social projects,
right?
More social issues. So yeah. If less people are hungry, right, then you've got less crime,
right?
Because less people need to
right.
steal to eat.
Sorry, I'm making notes. Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it seems these things are kind of no-brainers, but you know, a lot of folks on the political spectrum don't like the idea of social issues. And but you know, defunding the police. There's also, I mean, there's Camden, New Jersey. They disbanded their police force and then remade it, but like while integrating the community. And there's kind of like mixed feelings on like how that's gone, because it's the crime trends kind of go up and down. The crime is much lower now than it was before they disbanded their police, but there have been other years where it's been higher. It's like a, it's a still, you know, this whole democratic experiment, everything that we're doing is just an experiment.
Right? I was trying to explain that to my sister. I don't think she understood what it is. And I was like, this is the only country where this is going on. It's an experiment, and it's a living, breathing philosophy that changes as the people need it to.
Yeah. And I think everybody needs to be reminded of that right now.
Yeah.
Because we get so about like America, F yeah. And it's like, well, America is the people, and America is what the people decide that it is.
Exactly.
You know? And if the people think that it's important to take a knee during the national anthem, then it's not unpatriotic because it's the American people who are doing it. Citizen oversight of the police, but this is greater than, I think, like the whole the policing thing is definitely like a part of it, right? But I mean, there have been programs for, like, since before the abolition of slavery, but definitely since then, there have been programs that are in place that have kept people of color as second-rate citizens. And the idea of dismantling all of that is huge. And the steps that would be needed are beyond my capacity right now. So it's like, it's kind of like focus in on like one thing. It's like right now we're talking about police brutality.
Right.
Let's focus in on that. Okay. And then let's not forget that we still, if we can slay this dragon, there's 12 more behind it that, yeah, we got to go for.
I've been feeling, and I've felt this for a while, even before this whole thing, that America as a whole country doesn't really vote intelligently in any way. There's so much preoccupation with the very top office that there's, yeah, there's not a lot of talk about judges, sheriffs.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, elected officials that directly, that you can have a face-to-face conversation. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like, yeah, all of us, everyone needs to start looking down ballot and fixing their own neighborhood and city, and you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I mean, well, act locally, think globally, right? But like, what's interesting too, I think that our obsession with the presidency has also led to an obsession with like this two-party system, and just sort of like whoever the president is, like you support this president, so like I'm going to vote that way down ticket. But the problem with that is like there's not as much enough participation in local primary elections,
right,
within party, because you can have two quote unquote progressive candidates who have vastly differing opinions on things. And you've also got some of the worst violence and some of the most like violent police forces right now are in Democratic cities with Democratic leadership. Like, right, there's, you know, just have a Democratic mayor doesn't mean that you're not going to have a violent police force. So it's, you know, it's, yeah, I definitely agree with you. And I'd add that people should go even further, you know, as far as their community involvement. But it's a lot to ask for sure, because we're kind of, we are a society right now that we really value comfort. We really value convenience. Amazon is so huge for a reason, you know? And we don't necessarily, like in this moment, like activism is super trendy, right? In this moment, all this sounds like a good idea. I just, like, in 3 months, well, I won't say that. I think this is going to be, it's going to be nutty for a while, because we've got an election in November. And I think 2020, we can probably just count on the rest of this year just being like the craziest stuff we've ever seen happen is going to happen this year. But after that, you know, yeah, like, it's at some point, it's not going to be cool to, like, it's cool to say Black Lives Matter right now.
Yeah.
Like, it's cool.
Yeah.
At some point, it's not going to be as cool as it is right now. Right. At some point, people are going to be back to going out to eat together and stuff. And if you interrogate the ways that in which, you know, we're kind of supporting colonization, or, you know what I mean? Like, you might get called out on, like, don't be a bummer. And like, if that happens, are you going to be like, no, man, you don't be a bummer. Like, this shit's real. Like, is everyone going to continue on this sort of like path? And I don't know. I hope that everyone gets, in order to vote like in your primaries and stuff. You have to be active, but you got to be educated too. And you got to take, you got to take that kind of education really, really seriously, more seriously than just like getting the quick headlines off your phone. You know what I mean? You got to like dedicate time of your day to like really getting down to like finding good news sources, but then really like, you got to read your articles. Like you can't just, we want to order stuff on Amazon and watch Netflix all day. And that's just not going to cut it, because at the end of the day, I don't think that that, you know, support living our lives, supporting corporations in that way. They don't have our best interests at heart.
No,
we live in a capitalist society where like whatever, you know, wherever the money is, luckily, you know, activism is trending. So like, we're probably going to see like a wave of like really great documentaries. You know, we're going to see like all the content's going to be based around this for now. We have to do better as people to like have the wherewithal to not just make a stand when it's like this, and not just the extent of our activism can't just be sharing something on Facebook and posting our opinion about it. You know,
it's gotta
go deeper than that. That's a step. It's a step. I can't blame anybody for like where they're at on their journey right now. Like not everybody's supposed to be a freaking monk, you know? And I don't know how helpful that is either. So.
Yeah. Well, it just seems like it seems like the American people as a whole at this point are just longing to be pacified. You know what I mean? It's like, just give me the pacifier and I'll be quiet. You know what I mean? It's just very, it's very odd. It seems like complacency. And I mean, I know that for a lot of people, a lot of white people that feel there's the, well, I'm not racist kind of thing, but you're still making your way through a racist system, right? Yeah. And you're benefiting from that racist system. And so, I'm doing my part. I've got an open mind. I'm hip. You know what I mean? Whatever that stuff is. And I noticed the other day when I was talking to James, I even did that. There was a point where I was like, well, I'm not racist. And it was like, well, that's not the thing here.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and that's why the whole like silence is violence sort of thing. It's like, if you know, there's this this analogy of like, if there was someone in a burning, if like you were in a house and there was somebody in a room next to you and there was a fire in that room, if there was a child, would you get that child out? And are you, how responsible are you if it's in the next room and you know that child is going to die? And then it's like, okay, well, what if it's the house across the street? If you know that there's a child in a burning room in a house across the street, how responsible are you? So like, what is the difference?
How far will you go?
The distance.
Yeah.
What's the distance between when now the blood is off your hands? You know that it's happening, but it's not in your community. So is the blood now off your hands because it's on the other side of town where you're, when your town was segregated historically to begin with.
Right. Yeah. That's just a fucked up thing. You said that you work with kids at CASA, right?
Yeah. Okay. So I'm the multimedia developer, and I'm in no way like speaking on like their behalf at all.
Right.
I have to be totally clear on that. That, you know, but I do I'm the multimedia developer for Texas CASA, for like the state, the agency that kind of oversees and provides material support for the county, for the individual like county programs. So I don't, and I shouldn't say oversee, we just provide support. Every CASA is their own 501c3. But I help make trainings, produce our podcast, I produce some interview series. So I don't get to interface with kids myself.
Okay.
And nobody at Texas CASA does, but we help create trainings for the folks that are interfacing with kids. Yeah.
Do you feel like that, I mean, just like from the time we go to school, the way that we learn our own history is, from what I am starting to understand, pretty fucked.
Yeah. No, it's a completely whitewashed.
It is completely whitewashed. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a man. So there's two books. One's the I got a copy right here, An Indigenous People's History of the United States. And then there's another one about, oh, I forget. It's a very similar title. And it's not called The Alternate History of the United States, but it's, man, that's a really good one. I'm gonna look it up real quick. Because it breaks down all of these different historical events that happened and kind of like what we were taught versus what the scholars at the time were actually saying about it. And like also what historians, people who teach history in college, like what, like basically like what really happened. You know what I mean? Like some, especially like some of the policies and some of the presidents that are celebrated for this. And then you don't really ever hear about that.
Thomas Jefferson, that's one that I've really, that's somebody that I've spent a lot of my life admiring the words that he spoke, and realizing that they were just words is pretty painful as well.
Yeah. Woodrow Wilson was a monster. And I can't remember exactly what he had done, but I remember reading about him. It's called A People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn.
I feel like I've heard of that.
I remember reading a chapter about Woodrow Wilson and just being floored. Like absolutely floored. And it, you know, it works in this narrative. We have to have this narrative of the American hero sort of thing. We build our statues to be larger than life, and we make these infallible people that we can hold up to where we hold people to these unhuman,
like we look at them as deities, like infallible.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We hold them to these standards. Sorry.
Like they're not human.
Yeah. And we expect that of each other and of our leaders now. And I think knowing the humanity of our past leaders kind of helps put everybody else into perspective, because it's like, you can support our current president and still, like, you don't... In order to support a president, you don't have to completely drink the Kool-Aid and be like, no, no matter what he says, it's right. Because then we're forming this like cultish, you know, but you think that that's what you're supposed to think about American presidents. It's like, I support Donald Trump. Therefore, Donald Trump is infallible. Anything he does or says, you know, it's a danger.
My father has not spoken to me in 2 months because I can find fault in a leader that he finds absolutely no fault in.
It's
weird, because hearing it from a perspective of his, he said to me, like one of our last conversations was, did you see Trump's coming out with the vaccine next week. Like he's in his office, like with beakers, like, what world do you live in, dude? Like that guy's not doing shit, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah,
that's a tough thing to be able to look at our leaders for what they are able to do, but still recognize their faults is a pretty important. You talked in one of the things about in one of your videos. You read a letter from Intel, like the president of it or the CEO or something.
CEO, yeah,
yeah, basically wrote like, "Hey, we stand with this movement. Black Lives Matter."
Yeah, and then also pledged like $1 million to grassroots movements that are working towards that are working for Black lives. And then they've had like a large pool of nonprofits that people could donate to that Intel would match the donations. But they added Black Lives Matter and Minnesota Freedom Fund and a couple of others to that pool, to their donation pool, which is really cool.
Okay.
And then yeah, and so I've mentioned I think Glossier did 1 million Peloton donated $500,000.
Chick-fil-A is doing their part. Sorry. Yeah, that was disgusting. Those people are just disgusting.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, sure, say what you want, because legally you can.
You can, yeah.
But if you have anything on your social media that identifies you as a Chick-fil-A employee, like, don't. Or remove anything on your social media that can let that can be brought back to Chick-fil-A. That's just unreal. It's unreal to, like, you could have just stayed out of it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if you weren't supporting it as Chick-fil-A, if you're like, you could have just stayed out of it. Like, why even? They had just gone through this whole thing of trying to, like, repair their image from the homophobic stuff. They just gone through this whole thing. And then there's this whole movement of people who are like, yeah, we can't be all about cancel culture because then people won't think that they can be, that redemption isn't possible. So, like, you still should eat at Chick-fil-A. And it's like, no, look, look, like, and it's tough because I think that an us against them mentality will not work. But we still have to call stuff out,
yeah.
You know? So, like, where's that balance? Because it can't all be about finding corporations that are, I mean, that's definitely one step, you know, like, I don't know what I'm going to do without shopping at Home Depot, you know, finding out how much money their CEO is donating to the Trump reelection campaign. For me, that's just kind of a non-sequitur. And I think, like, Lowe's had done the same. I need to, like, look that up, but, like, I don't know where to, like, get cheap, quick, like, lumber for crafts around the house and stuff anymore.
Yeah.
I guess the Restore, you know what I mean? But there's also, because of a pandemic, you have fewer options to get resources. And so a lot of the places that are still open are, like, much larger.
Yeah.
Do you, yeah, it's complex.
It is very complex. It is. And again, like, thank you for taking the time. And I mean, I just feel like these dialogues need to happen between everyone, yeah. just for the sheer understanding of the situation, because really, like, I'm not putting the blame on something else, but as a white person in America, you really are shielded.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see the way that it actually is in the system, you know? There's things that you don't, I mean, there's things you learn about from, like, as me, like, from Ice-T songs and Public Enemy songs or Do the Right Thing, that, like, things I didn't even know going into those movies. I came out a little bit more woke, if you say, you know,
woke,
to say
yeah.
the least, yeah. Or to use that term. But it is just so complex, and it's so ingrained in the system. Like, that's the part that's just blowing my fucking mind, is that just it is the system.
I mean, and culturally it's nuts. Like, having, so I try to make sure that, like, my daughter's going to grow up mixed race in whatever the post 2020 US looks like. Right. And we're going to have a talk, but she's lighter skin. She's got kinky, dirty blonde hair, but she's got black features. And, like, and, you know, she is, I want to make sure that I'm raising her in a way that she's proud of everything that she is, right?
Yeah.
And so part of that is not allowing her entertainment to be whitewashed. And it is so difficult to try to find a balance of, I mean, Frozen is all, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And so
yeah.
find stuff for children with, like, some black characters, but not the main character. And if the main character's ever black, it's like a black story.
Right.
We can't, I can't just give her just like a children's story with a black main character.
Right.
It's so difficult. So she watches a lot of things with animals and in like animated objects because they don't have color. And then, like, so, and with the video stuff that I do, I'm always using stock footage. and I always need to show people together and families and children. And you would not believe how difficult it is to find stock footage of non-white people. It is so hard. And when you're using stock footage, you have to use like a lot of it. You can't just use like one. You have to create this whole world. And so if I can only find like six clips of like Black businessman, you know, like there's only so much I can do with that. And so like every day that I'm working, like I'm reminded of how I'm not represented in the culture. And it's like a reminder every time we like choose something to put on the iPad, which my daughter didn't used to watch the iPad a lot, but quarantine and working from home has changed that. Yeah. So please don't judge us.
Yeah, my sister is a single mom with a 2-year-old, and I was like, is he watching TV again? And she's like, dude. And I was like, no, I didn't mean it like again. I understand. Yeah. She's like, yeah.
It's tough, man. It's tough. But she does a lot of games now too. She's old enough to do games on the iPads. That's good. But yeah, man, it's from the serious stuff to the seemingly innocuous stuff like representation, which is actually like hugely serious. If you want to raise a child to see their value and see that they aren't othered, you know, you want to see them be able to see positive representations of people that look like them in pop culture. That's difficult. That's difficult, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Will you go through some organizations that people can donate to or research to donate to? That you can recommend?
Yeah. Are we talking locally to Texas or to the country?
Let's talk locally to Texas.
Yeah. So the two organizations that I've organized with the most have been Austin Justice Coalition and Black Lives Matter Austin. Austin Justice Coalition has just gotten, you might want to start with Black Lives Matter Austin. I'm not sure how much they have been pulling in. I know AJC with the last weekend, with everything that happened, they got a good amount of material support. Not at all saying that they don't need more, but I don't know for sure how Black Lives Matter Austin is faring. And people for some reason see AJC as less like militant and like they're like easier to stomach because they're community programs or because they're doing more policy stuff. They work with the city more often, I think. So they're kind of seen as like this, it's like an easier, like my first activist organization type thing.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that in a bad way at all.
No, I know what you mean.
Yeah. I'm saying they're accessible. You know what I mean? And so like a lot of people think of them first when they're going to donate, but don't forget about Black Lives Matter Austin, the Austin specific chapter. So a lot of people will donate to Black Lives Matter, but there's actually an Austin chapter. And so you got to look them up on Facebook, which is Facebook/Black Lives Matter Austin. They're the ones who locally, if you want to donate to.
And what is the Black Lives Matter? I know that the Austin Justice Coalition goes for policy change and these kind of things. What is Black Lives Matter kind of working on?
They're doing more kind of the same as far as like community outreach, and providing material support for people of color who live in Austin. It's just kind of, it's the same fist, but a different finger.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Is there anything else you want to say about stuff? Is there any messages you want to get across? Read something?
Yeah, I wanted to read something.
Yeah, please do.
This is a message from a friend of mine who lives in Minneapolis. And when the news was saying that things had been kind of calming down, they weren't saying things were totally calm, but it didn't feel like it had the same urgency. It was like a quieter night, you know, across the country or something like that. She had reached out and responded about what her experience had been like, and then I asked her to elaborate on that. So this is some of her notes. She's been taking notes on what's going on. My Black family, life in Minneapolis looks like go bags packed and ready, cars gassed up. Doing dishes and preparing meals has now turned into time to keep watch over our street through the kitchen window. And realizing that two of the vehicles that set off my internal alarms have now been officially identified as being present to do harm. Calling the numbers given by the city and state to report suspicious activity and getting no responses. my husband doing nightly sweeps around our home in the bushes down the alley, checking each morning to see which of us had nightmares in the few hours that we did sleep. Sleeping every night in the basement, sharing a full-size futon with my 14-year-old son and our two 40-pound dogs as my husband stays up all night keeping watch over the house and hood. Asking, did I eat at some point each day because I truly don't remember? Asking, did you eat to my son and husband each day because our appetites are suppressed? Our systems are overly stressed. Not feeling safe to be outside in the yard by myself in broad daylight because Black women have been disappearing. And she had detailed in an earlier message that there have been, they found explosive devices in their neighborhood. And they've experienced shootouts. And that their post office just recently reopened so they can receive support. And it's just it's interesting because the levels of privilege, like everyone has some level of privilege, right? I have the privilege of being able to like be a guest on your podcast and be able to talk about this. And so using my voice to share about somebody else who can't. And so I think that what we need to recognize in Austin, and I think in other cities where we're fighting the same fight, is that we're also fighting for them, because that's specifically where this thing sort of like popped off. And so while we have a broader reach, broader goals, and we're talking about, you know, defunding APD and the different things that we can do locally, I don't want us to lose sight of the communities in Minneapolis that are being so, so terribly affected right now. And what's going on in Philly and what's going on in New York, these are like our brothers and sisters in arms right now. Not in arms, but like in, yeah, you know,
locked arms.
In these arms. Yeah. I just want I want to remember that. And I want your listeners to remember that it's important to stay positive about what are the possibilities are, but to keep them, if people pray, keep them in your prayers. If people, you know, whatever your thing is, like, we are a large, disparate, diverse country, but we are also very much going through these similar experiences right now. Especially like our community is, there's like Black people hurting everywhere right now. And that's important to remember. I think that it's a privilege, you know, you're lucky to not have to have it constantly weighing on your mind. I think that a lot of well-meaning folks are doing a good thing and like intentionally having it on their minds, but you can also turn it off at any point. And that's,
I realize that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I appreciate you, man. And I appreciate you like wanting to help amplify a Black voice over here. I don't really know everything that I'm talking about, but I'm learning and happy to share everything that I do as I do. And
it's going to be a long time to erase so much that's taken so long to be put in place to get it out of place. It will take a long time, but I feel like with people like you, like I was inspired by watching your videos, and I felt like, I just feel like this is a time when I've gone through, you know, 51 years of not really knowing what's going on and thinking that that things were one way, but they're just really not. It's not just occasionally a racist cop does something bad. The system is fucked up. And that's something that I never really got. I never really knew about redlining. I never knew the history of African-American freedom and how limited it actually is. You know what I mean? And I know how I feel in my heart, but there's just a lot more to do. There's a big system to dismantle and rebuild. And I want to be part of that to make a better world for all of us.
Okay, man. It's similar. Sorry. I have one other thought.
No, go ahead.
It's different, but similar to, I remember when I first realized that I can, as a man, I can walk around at night and have a very different experience than a woman walking around alone at night.
Yeah.
Right. And I remember like the first time that like really sunk in, you know, and being, I was so like fired up about like, oh, this is BS. You know what I mean? Like smash the patriarchy, like, you know, right. And then having to recognize like my role in that. And like, I can't like all like, I can't, yeah, I don't know. I can see it play out. I can see patriarchy play out like regularly in, even in my interactions, like with my wife, you know, like why would I automatically feel like I'm entitled to like X, Y, or Z, right? Like I'm just on autopilot as like a man.
Right,
and
exactly.
Not thinking about how I'm reinforcing, unless I'm like very conscious in every decision that I make, I'm likely reinforcing this patriarchy that, yes, I think is disgusting.
Yes.
So just thinking it's disgusting isn't enough. And just like trying to be this like active, you know, it's not about me posting on my Facebook wall about how, because I'm so excited that I just learned about the patriarchy, you know, being like, it's not about me like trying to be some crusader for women around the world. You know what I mean? That's like,
no,
not,
exactly, yeah,
that's not what it's about. Right. And so it's a funny parallel.
It
to,
is.
Yeah. And then, I mean, I'm just thinking about for Black women right now, how we had the dual sort of,
yeah,
the two-headed dragon of like racism, systemic and blatant, and adding that to the patriarchy. And we just got to do better. We just have to do better. And yeah, I would go as far as to say like, this should be a Black woman led movement more so than just a Black led movement, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Well, I guess people can go and see. I'll share your videos on our Facebook page. Is there anything else?
Cool, cool. Yeah, I'm gonna have to launch a page for those officially, just because I want to be able to post them with resources and links, and I want to get heavier into some topics like defunding the police, and I want to cite sources, and so I need to have a way to kind of share the background information,
right?
And I want my personal page to be, needs to be separate from that in some, yeah, way. But for now, yeah, that's the best way to see them. And sure, looking forward to sharing more stuff. And just, yeah, everybody keep fighting the good fight. Stay woke.
Yeah. Well, or keep on waking up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, Jonathan.
Yeah, Johnny.
Yeah, thank you so much. It means a lot to me personally. And I feel like, you know, the more this conversation's going on, the easier it is to eradicate it, you know, to,
yeah,
eradicate racism.
And yep, we've got to have the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you for your time, and stay in touch, man. If you need anything, I'm always around. And if I need anything, I'll call you. I'm just joking.
Absolutely, man. No, thanks for giving me the opportunity to share.
Yeah, thanks for sharing.
To share a little more. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Thanks, buddy.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. If we just let it be, na 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 na, the world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. No, 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 no. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Change it, yeah. Change it. Can't do it alone.
Can't do it alone.
Need some help, y'all. Y'all.
Can't do it alone.
Can't do it alone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wake up, everybody. Wake up, everybody. Need a little help, y'all.
Yes, I do.
Need a little help.
Say it, boy.
Need some help, y'all. Change the world, what it used to be. Can't do it alone.
Can't do it alone.
Need some help, yeah.
Need some help, yeah.
Wake up, everybody. Get up, get up, get up, get up.
Wake up.
What?
color. Everybody, we need each other. Wake up, everybody. Well, you see, we need, wake up, everybody. We
come
need,
on, wake up, everybody. No more sleeping in bed. No more backward thinking. Time for thinking ahead. Wake up, all you teachers. Start to teach a new way. They're the ones that suffer each and every day. Teach the children.
Teach the baby.
Teach the babies.
Teach the children.
Teach the children.
Teach the babies.
Teach the children.
Teach the babies.
They're the ones who's got.